Let's do it.
Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, 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 and double, triple, oh, yeah. African American Empowerment Saturday. It's 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's your main man, Marvin Rome, in the room. Coming to you live, we got Brother Booker in the house, Brother George with Willie Mitchell, Kwanzaa, and much, much more. Come on back. Stop me. Kick your feet up. Let's do it. Oh, yeah. There is no greater love than for self and kind. No greater love. Welcome, brothers and sisters, to African American, Black, if you want to, Empowerment Saturday. It's where we provide information, education, culture, enrichment, and so much more, right? But here's the deal, right? We're not doing it in confusion and chaos. That's over with, right? We're not doing all that arguing, and screaming, and talking, and lifting our voices and yelling at each other and hanging up and all that cussing. Nope, 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 nope. We are going to do it in a very mature, ethical, enriching, growing way to educate our people. Now, it's clear we're going to have our differences. That's part of the stoop. That's the Brunswick. That's the potluck. But we can always have respect for one another, and we can always agree to disagree. It's possible to do that, right, in a mature, confident way, because if you believe in what you believe in, you just do, and it's okay because everybody is right. Tell this to your kids and your spouses and your mate. Everybody is right from their perspective, whether you want to believe it or not, through their experiences, right, through their trials and tribulations and how they've been educated, formed, and developed and experienced this world, they are right. And you got to allow people the room to learn and grow or to stay right where they are. It's up to them. All we can do is put it out there. So today we got Brother Booker, thinking like slaves instead of thinking like gods. It should be powerful. In the meantime, I want to talk about the tenets of the NAAEA and our mission. You know, our mission is simply to really look at empowering African American. We're really looking at the needs of the African American community, and we're going to try to meet those needs through the development of programs and services that, one, support, two, inspire, three, motivate, and four, empower each member, each community, each man, each woman, and each child. We want to collaborate and partner with existing community-based organizations, right, to promote the concept of peace within our community, within ourselves, within our families, and our culture, right? And we want to do it through the peace concept, right? There's five peace concepts. I'm only going to give you one. Politics, right, a political agenda. Economics, an economic agenda. Athletics, which encompasses health, wellness, fitness, nutrition, mental health, physical health, and emotional health, right? And then culture, relevant cultural programs, right, that really help us feel good about who we are. And then education, right, a comprehensive education that really has us to really embody this new lifestyle, this new way of being on this earth. Lastly, we will resurrect, promote, develop, and instill a sense of pride, integrity, dignity, respect, and love for self. Self and kind, right? I like that. Within our communities and our families and our homes. And that's what it's all about. It's all about doing the work of working on ourselves. And that's really the only way to be. And so the tenets of the NAEA is really simple. Politics, a political agenda. You have to have one. An economic agenda, health, wellness, fitness, nutrition, under athletics. And these are all departments, and these are all centers that we're going to develop. We will. A cultural center and an educational center that educates and develops and resurrects our people. And now for the Stan Macklin moment. Be right back. Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah, man, we got the deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
Thanks so much, Brother Stan. Thank you. Thank you so much. That's my brother and my partner and my mentor for many years, and just a wonderful man. He's not with us here physically anymore, but his words live on institutions that define our own reality. And when you look at the peace concept, these are our departments, or these are institutions, a political institution to educate our people, an economic institution to teach us how to operate under capitalism and how to use money. Athletic center, health, wellness, and fitness going on all day. Mental health to take care of our minds and our bodies. Cultural center to help us understand the importance of culture. And then educational centers to help re-educate and reinvigorate our people. You can't go wrong with that. You simply can't. And now it's time for my favorite segment of the show. It's the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment with my brother George. Brother George, you got to bring it, brother. Oh, yeah. Hey, Mom.
Bring it. What? Right here. We're not going anywhere.
Brother, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing good, brother. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. I'm excited, man. I'm excited. I'm excited for life. I'm excited for the show. And I'm excited to hear what you got coming up and also what Brother Booker got to share with us today. What you got for us on the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment?
Well, brother, today from the Aguza Saba, Kwanzaa Principle Ujima, Collective Work and Response, Brothers and Sisters Problems, Our Problems, and Solve Them Together. Ujima, collective work and responsibility to build and keep our community together, to make our brothers and sisters' problems our problems and solve them together. Ujima, collective work and responsibility. We are all, by nature or by choice, members of a number of different social groups, from our racial and sexual orientation to our family of birth, to our church, workplace, or social group. Our membership benefits us and the group in many ways and also involves responsibility. Number one, for each of us to be responsible for ourselves as far as possible. The strength of a community is based on the strength of its members. Number two, for all of us to be responsible to and nurture our various communities so that they in turn can nurture us. Collective work and responsibility. You too. Now today, I want to read out of a book that I bought for my grandson because he was very interested in the creation story, and so he had guessed some things right, but I wanted to give him a foundation that was constructed upon the ancient African story of creation. And this ancient African story of creation is called the Shabaka Stone. The Shabaka Stone Story for Children, an African Star Story. And this was written by Kaba Hiawatha Kamani. Some might also know him as Brother Booker T. Coleman. Shabaka Stone. The Shabaka Stone is an astronomical theory carved on a black basalt rectangular stone at the direction of the Nisa Nisetpeti. Pharaoh Shabaka of the Nepotin, also known as the Kush-Kemetic dynasty, about 710 BCE, before the Common Era. Shabaka wrote a more ancient version of the metaphoric story in honor
of his ancient Kushite ancestors. Chewbacca stone is a cosmic roadmap for every creation it creates, as long as the creation follows nature's law. The roadmap is Maat, truth, justice, balance, morality, order, harmony, righteousness, and reciprocity. What goes around comes around. You get what you give seven times over. The Chewbacca stone. Somewhere around 710 years before the Common Era, Neset Piti, Pharaoh Chewbacca, directed his scientists and scholars to rewrite the works of their ancestors titled the Memphite Theology. This ancient creation story was written on either papyri or leather and had been damaged by time and climate. King Chewbacca had the Memphite Theology carved on black basalt stone and tells a metaphoric drama that outlines the coming into being and continuing process of becoming of the cosmic universe. African scholars enhanced this process by comparing patterns in all living things in the cosmos. The ancient African scholars who studied and taught biology made comparisons to the development of human life. African farmers compared it to the development of plants. Other scholars in different subject areas made the same comparisons. The ancient scholars raised the potential of their consciousness by asking the question that would answer all others. What existed before existence itself? From this question, that expressed their studies using figurative language, explaining their theory of cosmic history. Chewbacca stone also connects the heavens with the earth. Now, it's a much more complex version of that Hiawatha also wrote. And but that one right there is for children. And it's an interesting story, and actually it's a story that was rewritten from an ancient story. So when they say 710 years before the Common Era, that's when it was rewritten. That's not when it originally was written from the beginning or put together from the beginning. So, Brother Marvin, I know that's a lot there, but I plan on turning that over to my grandson. You know, not me. That ain't my thing.
All right, Brother George. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome, brother.
It is all about education, man. You keep bringing the knowledge, and we'll keep pouring it down into our people, right? So if we pick up the books and if we go do the research and continue to learn ourselves, we'll be good. But guess what, Brother George?
Yes, sir.
You know what time it is? It's time for the empowerment question of the week. The American empowerment question of the week going out. Slido is in effect today, slido.com. You can go out to 426-1282 to put yours in if you want to. That's 426-1282 is the Slido number. Go and slide on out there, slido.com. Here's the question. How do we, as African Americans, begin to return to collective work and responsibility? How do we return to that?
Well, it starts with yourself. You know, you have to make a commitment to work together with somebody else. Because collective work and responsibility doesn't have to be a million people all at once. It can start out with two. And so I suggest that because we have such difficulty because of our programming with working together and mainly trust factors, you know, we don't trust each other. So I would start out with small groups of two or three, four people, and try to accomplish something like that. And at the same time, you can carry that over and take two or three young children and have them build something together or do something together or put some plan together and work it out to its fruition. And that way we can build confidence in our children to trust each other and to work together with each other. So that's my answer, brother.
Thank you, Brother George. You're right on it. And it's so important that we begin to work together. That collective work and responsibility piece is so important toward our progress. We can't keep tearing each other down. We have to build each other up. Destroying each other is not going to be the answer. Here's the deal. Brother George mentioned something in his piece. The laws of my art can go a long way to helping us, right? To help us grow. Go research them and just look at what they were asking individuals to do in their lives, and maybe we'll do a segment or a show or just on the laws. But we have to learn to work together, and we have to, like Brother George said, gain confidence in one another. You gain that through building trust, right? Through building relationship, right? Giving and sharing. It's transactions now, right? Building networks and relationships where we can begin to be assured that a man and a woman is a person of their word. And we're going to have to get to that place where we can trust the word of our brother. We used to be able to trust that or our sister on just a handshake. Let's continue to do the work of looking at how we can grow our communities one day at a time just by doing the collective work and responsibility. Start with one or two and just continue to build. And that's the African-American Empowerment Question of the Week. Thank you, Brother George. I appreciate that. And now our segment with Brother Booker comes up with Being the One. Brother Booker, are you ready? You're going to tell us how to be the one today. All right, here we go. Oh, yeah. Do it. Booker, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good, Brother Marvin. How are you? Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. I can hear you loud and clear.
Yes, sir, brother. As I always want to start the show by saying peace to all of the brothers and sisters that are out there within the sound of my voice. And Brother George, assalamu alaikum, brother. I think I'm going to say something today that's going to tie into what you were just talking about, starting with the one. We've been talking about the characteristics and qualities of the one. And, of course, the first one, I'm going to recap what we've gone through to this point and then introduce this week's characteristic. Of course, the first one is the one is honest with himself. The second one, the one loves himself. The third one, the one loves his people. The fourth one, the one believes in himself. The fifth one is the one believes in his people even if they don't believe in themselves. The sixth one, the one also stands, the one always stands for what he knows is right, even if he has to stand alone. And this week's characteristic number seven is the one loves for his brother what he loves for himself. And I think Brother George hit on that a little earlier. You love for your brother what you love for yourself. What I want my brother to have. When my brother hurt, I'm hurt. When my brother's down, I'm down. We're in this together. That's my brother. There's no difference in us. We are one. The one loves for his brother what he loves for himself, brother. And what I want to talk about today now is what you said, thinking like slaves instead of thinking like gods. And I come to this by really focusing on the first characteristic of the and quality of the one. The one is honest with himself. We must be honest with ourselves before we can share any other characteristic or demonstrate any other characteristic of the one we must be honest with ourselves. And being honest with myself and analyzing my life, I'm going to start this with my life before I get into my gospel, if you will. And I'm going to touch on that in a little bit. But I got to start with my life because I'm being honest with myself. And being honest with myself, I now understand that we think like slaves and not like gods. And why do I say this? Because that's what we've been made to do. We've been made to think like slaves, not like gods. That's what slavery was all about. Now, how did I come to this conclusion? Well, from studying my life, and I'm going to start with my life, as I just said, so bear with me. Studying my life, my 71 years on this plantation, and analyzing the past, studying the past even before me, analyzing that, I come to the conclusion. You see, when I look at life, I look at my life and how my family and friends grew up and died, I see or understand how it was all tied to slavery. I remember my mother, my father, of course, my uncle Bubba, my uncle Melvin, my Aunt Bessie, all my great-grandmother, Annabelle Chambers. I remember being born in a house in Richmond, Virginia, what is called the 17th Street Bottom, across from Old Buckhannon Elementary School. I remember being in that house, and all of us were there. All of us were there in that one house. We didn't have an indoor bathroom at that time. We had what they call an outhouse. You know, we had a few chickens, and, you know, and yada. I remember these things coming, and I remember loving, caring people in that house, and I was the only child. And I remember when we moved out of that house up onto Nine Mile Road, I was loaded. I didn't know I was poor. I didn't know we were poor at that time when I started elementary school, because everybody in that house would ask me, did I have lunch money before I went to school? And lunch was, I think, 25 cents or 30 cents. And, then I learned how to lie and say no to all of them, and they all would give me my 30 cents. So I went to school 6, 7 years old with a pocket full of change. So I didn't know we were poor. I didn't even at that time know we were black, if you will. I didn't know the problems and see the problems that they were dealing with at that time. Now, my father wasn't in my life, which I grew to understand and question why not. And I had a feeling about my daddy. Well, to be frank, I grew to hate my father because he wasn't there. And my question was, how can he not be with my mama, as sweet and loving and caring as my mama is? How can my daddy, what's wrong with that Negro? I'm going to say it like that. What's wrong with him not being with my mother? But I was still connected to him because I was going to his mama, my grandmother's house as a little boy, getting lunches and all that, but I didn't know. And it was only when we got to Nine Mile Road when I started to see the struggles that they were going through. All of the things they were doing. I remember one day my mother sent me to the street. She said, go look and see if the furniture out on the street. And I'm like, what? See if the furniture outside. And she thought we had been put out because Uncle Bubba had a problem. Uncle Bubba would get his paycheck, and if we didn't go get that money from him at lunchtime, he would get drunk, gamble it, and did not pay the rent. And we was like, go see the furniture on the street. So now I'm starting to see what's going on in the house. Now I'm starting to see that what I thought was love was still love, but they had issues. Now I'm starting to see there's a difference in this society about between black folk and white folk, but I still didn't quite understand it yet at that age of my life. I think I was about 7, 8, 9 years old, and I'm still struggling with it and seeing, and I remember how all that love we had in that house was loving, but then when they all got together as a family, all come over, when they come in the door, they hugging each other. Oh, man, I love you, I miss you, and everything. And then the next thing you know, a few minutes later, a few hours later, it's all mother, and they go, where my gun, I'm going to kill. And these are family. These are my uncles and aunts and grandmothers. I'm like, what? And my mother had been hiding the guns the night before, and I'm like, why is she hiding the guns? Now I see why she was hiding the guns. And what is causing this? Of course, I didn't ask that question at the time. I didn't know to ask that question, but I knew what I found out what was causing it. They start drinking that liquor. They come in and start loving, and they start drinking that liquor, and then wham. And then the next thing you know, the fights break out, the argument break out among family members. And then when we move the Gilpin Court into the projects, now I'm seeing another thing. But back in those days in Gilpin Court, we stuck together. I started to realize, I knew then we were poor. I wasn't a doubt in my mind, I knew we were poor then. But we were poor together. We stuck together. We helped each other. It was nothing to go say, Miss Rooster, Mama said, send her a loaf of bread. Do you have a loaf of bread? Do you have some flour? Do you have $5? You got $2? Same thing, vice versa. And we sat out all night long in the summertime on the porch at 1, 2, 3 in the morning in Gilpin Court. Without nobody driving by a shooting, without nobody robbing. We saw a drunk brother coming home. We didn't knock him in the head. We took him home because we knew his family. We knew his sons. We were together then. But I didn't know or understand at that time that there already was a process, a plan, if you will, in motion to destroy that unity, that oneness, that family, that coming together as a community, break that up. I didn't understand at the time that there was a plan already in place, because later on came the drugs, in addition to the alcohol, the competition to get out of the projects, the preachers and the teachers started moving out of the communities because they wanted to get out into the suburbs. But I didn't know as a young man at that time what was going on, what it was leading to, okay? And I did know, I didn't know at that time, there were like two movements in the early years of my life by black folks. Now, let me back up a minute here and mention Nat Turner. Now, remember Nat Turner. Y'all remember Nat Turner, right? If you study history, you see that Nat Turner, there were no violent movements by black folks on the plantation after Nat Turner. Now, when I say violent movements, I'm talking about black folks running around the plantation, killing white folks, fighting for their freedom like Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey did. After Nat Turner, there were no more of those, okay? No more of those. But early in my lifestyle, in my teens, in my lifetime, in my teens, there were two black movements in this country. The Civil Rights Movement and the Nation of Islam, okay? Now, I'm going to come back to those two. Just remember, two movements in my teens, Nation of Islam, Civil Rights Movement, led by Dr. King, John B. Elijah Muhammad, Nation of Islam, okay? Now, as I was growing up, I said, in this environment I was in, when it came time for me to go to high school, amidst all this confusion, schools were integrating. Because at that time, there were only two black high schools in Richmond, Virginia. Maggie Walker, Armstrong. Only two. But when I got to high school, John Marshall and George Wythe, Thomas Jefferson, prominent white schools integrated. And I decided to go to John Marshall because it started in the ninth grade. Now, I did not realize at that time this was going to be a very key point in my life. Because I was singing with a group of brothers from Gilpin Court, and we would go to school in the morning in our outfits and sing outside the cafeteria. And a couple of white boys I was in class with heard us performing, and they invited us to audition with them over in Fulton Hill, section of Richmond. So we did go over and audition, and they said they didn't want all of us, they wanted me. And I said, no, we're a group, and a couple of brothers said, no, look, take this opportunity. Yeah, take this opportunity. You don't know. You go ahead and do what you got to do. Go ahead and do this for us. Take the opportunity. So I did. I got in a group with the white boys, and I started singing throughout Richmond with the white guys. And because of that, I also, in high school, got married. I had to drop out of high school. Had a child before my 18th birthday. Dropped out of high school. So now I'm getting jobs, and I needed a job. One of the white guys in the band worked at Channel 8 television station, and it was in Petersburg, Virginia at that time. And he asked me if I knew how to operate a television camera. And I said, Malcolm, I'll try to learn anything. He said, okay, I'm going to get you an interview. Got me an interview. I got the job. From that, I became the first black camera operator, a TV production person in Channel 8 in the state of Virginia. Then I became the first audio technician. Then I became the first black technical director, all because I was singing in this band. I had never done any of this before. And then because of that, when I joined the Navy to move this story forward a couple of years later, left Richmond to go to California, I become the first black journalist in the Navy to be the editor of the largest newspaper in the Navy, all because of that job at Channel 8, which also led to me becoming second black journalist to ever go to motion picture scriptwriting school from the University of Southern California through the Navy. Now, I mentioned this to Brother George a couple of weeks ago. I said, Brother George, I was on the verge of becoming, I apologize, Mama, but I was on the verge of becoming a house nigger. Brother George said, no, Brother Booker, you ain't gonna. I said, Brother George, trust me. And then when I shared with him, he said, oh, yeah, you really were. On that verge, because I was chasing money, I was chasing success, and now I'm being honest with myself. I had to look back and say, yes, I was on the verge of being a house Negro. I even got to the point my first wife and I split, and it was such a wicked divorce. I declared I would never date another black woman as long as I lived. And for 3 years, I did not. I went the other way. And God knows I thought I was making it. I was a journalist. I was an editor of the paper. I was in motion picture script writing. I was, I'm on my way to success. I'm thinking I got it made. But one thing happened that kind of woke me up a little bit. I came home on leave, and I met a brother that I grew up with. At the time, his name was John McGowan. When I come back, his name was Rahman. He was a Muslim. He had become a Muslim in the Nation of Islam. And he and I got into a big debate about Islam and Christianity. And, I'd have been to college by this time. Got my GED, I've been to college, and I'm thinking, but John is jabbing me to death, man. He's hitting me with knowledge. He's hitting me he just beat me. And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. How can he be doing this? He only got an eighth grade education. I've been to college. No. I know what I need to do. I need to study some more. I need to study the Bible because Brother John, at that time, he knew the Bible, and he knew the Quran. I didn't know either one. So I said, I need to regroup myself and come back, and I'm gonna bring that brother out of that craziness that he's in. So when I got back to San Diego, I took a course in New Testament, took a course in Old Testament. I went to D.C. and took a course in Islam. I read a book that he gave me, Message to the Black Man. And when I came back home, I went outside his house. We stand outside his house. He was living on the third floor. And I yelled, "Brother Rahman, assalamu alaikum." Because when I learned to study, and then I guess, like I said, I was studying at first for the wrong reason, to beat the brother in a debate. But then, thanks to the God in me, I learned to admit when I was wrong. And in my study, I saw that Brother Rahman was correct, and I was wrong. You see, I grew to understand that during my teen years, like I mentioned earlier, there was still some fight in black people against this evil, wicked system in which we are living. However, I did not know that there was already that plan in motion to kill all of that. Remember I told you earlier about Nat Turner? And how after Nat Turner, there weren't any more violent movements on the plantation? Well, the Civil Rights Movement, Nation of Islam, both. One was nonviolent. One was by any means necessary, if you will. But that's what we're going to stand for, by any means necessary. Now, any means necessary, the Nation of Islam had existed prior to the Civil Rights Movement, I later came to find out. A few decades prior to the Civil Rights Movement. I also learned to understand, I grew to understand that the Civil Rights Movement grew because that's the way the establishment wanted us to go. Non-violent. Not any means necessary. Not do for self. Not understand who you are. Love yourself. We don't want you in that direction. We want you in non-violent any means instead of any means necessary. Okay? Now, I said I'm going to share some information from you, these quotes that I call my gospel. And the books of my gospel were written by Henry Barry, Abraham Lincoln, Thomas Jefferson, and Benjamin Franklin. And I'm going to share with you what they said. A couple of things they said. Benjamin Franklin, in 1751, said, "Why increase the sons of Africa by planting them in America, where we have so fair an opportunity, by excluding all blacks, of increasing the lovely white and red?" And he made this quote in a 1751 essay entitled "Observations Concerning the Increase of Mankind." Now, in Islamic teachings, in Arabic language, some people say the word Adam, which when they say God created Adam and Eve, Adam means mankind. So when we talk about God creating Adam and Eve, he was creating mankind, okay? And Jefferson's clearly saying here, why increase the sons of Africa by planting them in America, where we have so fair an opportunity, by excluding all blacks, of increasing the lovely white and red, increasing mankind? Thomas Jefferson said in 1785, Jefferson said, "I advanced it." Now, this is 1785, remember, is about 9 years after Declaration of Independence, I believe, wasn't it? 1776? He said, "I advance it, therefore, as a suspicion only that the blacks, whether originally a distinct race or made distinct by time or circumstances, are inferior to the whites in the endowments of both body and mind. And Jefferson made these remarks in Notes on the State of Virginia, published in 1785. And then the next one of my gospels is Mr. Henry Berry, who was a slave owner in Virginia. Berry said, "We have, as far as possible, closed every avenue by which the light may enter the slave's mind. If we could extinguish the capacity to see the light, our work will be complete. They would then be on the level of the beasts of the fields, and we then should be safe." And Berry made these remarks during an 1832 speech before the Virginia House of Delegates. And Abraham Lincoln said in 1858, Lincoln said, "There is a physical difference between the white and black races which I believe will forever forbid the two races living together. While they do remain together, there must be the position of superior and inferior. And I, as much as any man, am in favor having the superior position assigned to the white race." Lincoln later said, "I will say then that I'm not, nor ever have been, in favor of bringing about in any way the social or political equalities of black, of the black and white races." Okay. Now, I said they're my gospel. That's my gospel. Those gentlemen there. And I want to come back to what Berry said, when he said, "We have, as far as possible, closed every avenue by which the light may enter the slave's mind. If we could extinguish the capacity to see the light, and by to see the light, I think he means understand the light, if we could extinguish that capacity to understand, our work would be complete. They would then be on the level of the beast of the fields. They would then be on the level of the beast of the field, and we then should be safe," is what he said. Okay? Now, I never met or talked to Henry Berry, obviously. I never met or talked to Abraham Lincoln, Thomas Jefferson, or Benjamin Franklin. But nor have I met Mark, Matthew, John, or Luke, the men who supposedly wrote the first four books of the gospel. But according to Rutgers, white people, they said what I just shared with you. Now, they said what I just shared with you by those four gentlemen in my gospel was actually said. It was true. Okay? Now, can I honestly say I trust white people? No, I can't and I don't. However, when I study what they said and look at our situation today, some 150 years later, I can see their plan in action. Berry said, "We have, as far as possible, closed every avenue by which the light may enter the slave's mind. If we could extinguish the capacity to understand, our work would be complete. They would then be on the level of the beasts of the fields, and we then would be safe." I remind you again what Lincoln said. I will say then that I am not, nor ever have been, in favor of bringing about in any way the social or political equality of white and black races. He also said, "The physical difference between white and black races, which I believe will forever forbid the two races living together. While they do remain together, there must be the position of superior and inferior. And I, as much as any man, have in favor having the superior position assigned to the white race. Again, being honest with myself, when I look at what these men said in my gospel, 150 years or so or more later, I see the plan in action, their plan in action, okay? We together, but there's a superior and there's an inferior. The light or knowledge or understanding to us as a people has been totally turned off still in our minds. That's why I say we think like slaves, not like gods. Well, how has this plan been able to work for all of these years? I would say that's a good question. Well, there are teachings that they tricked the first group of Africans or blacks into coming to America. And then for 100 years or more, chains, whippings, separations of families, taking children from parents, etc., torture, no education, destroying our language, killing us, lynching us, guns, and a systematic plan to divide us. First 100 years of slavery, breaking us, beating us, tricking us into submission, taking control of the minds, putting the fear of God in us. But the God is Him, our Master, and not our Father. But putting that fear in us. Then, still being honest with myself or ourselves, after 100 years of this torture, torment, breaking us, taking our capacity to be men, to be who we are, then it came to the point where they introduced us to religion. Okay, now, I'm being honest with myself, y'all. I'm talking about the one here. And the first characteristic of the one is we must be honest with ourselves. First book they gave us, 100 years later, after bringing us into slavery, captivating us, capturing us, torturing us, hanging us, lynching, doing all the evil and wicked things they could do while we were chained and bound, they give us the Bible. Now, let me say this. Being honest with myself, y'all, there are at least 15 religions around the world and just as many political systems. Do you understand what I said? There are at least 15 religions around the world and just as many political systems. There's Christianity, there's Islam, there's Judaism, there's Hinduism, there's Buddhism, there's Jehovah's Witness, And they all say there's only one God, and they all have Him. They all say they have the right one. Okay? But when you think about all the religions, in all the political systems, whether it's democracy, communism, Marxism, etc., whatever it is, no political system is guided by God. No political system in the world is guided by God. None. They all are, quote unquote, guided by supposedly man, as if God is not a man. But they all are guided by supposedly man, and they all don't mix God with their politics. And when you study all the religions of the world, all are controlled by the white man. Again, that's being honest with myself. All are striving for heaven after death. All are striving for heaven after death. If you act right while you're here, remember what Barry said. They would be like the beasts in the fields. We think like slaves instead of thinking like God. Malcolm once said, we've been hoodwinked and bamboozled. Hoodwinked and bamboozled. Like the beasts in the fields. Lincoln said they will always be inferior, always be superior. And I, like any man, will want to be the superior position and keep our niggas in the inferior position. And being honest with myself again, the number one thing since the whippings stopped, since the lynching, the physical lynching stopped, since the unadulterated rapes stopped and so forth, for the separate, the one thing that has kept us peaceful and nonviolent and in this hell that we are in today is religion. That's the thing that keeps us submissive. That's the thing that keeps us in check. I once shared my opinions with a white woman I worked with on Guam. And she worked for me on Guam, and I was telling her my beliefs and what I thought and what I felt. And she said, I was chief in the Navy at the time, and she said, Chief, I cannot believe what you are saying, because if I believe what you're saying, that there's no life after death, there's no heaven, she said, I would go off and just, that's the key. If we did not believe that, or think that, or think we're going to find peace or death, or heaven and death, wouldn't we change what we're doing now? Think like slaves, not like God. Well, how do slaves think? Slaves think hope alive. Slaves think we've come a long way, but we still have a long way to go. Slaves think you must vote in order for things to get better. Slaves think if you don't vote, stop complaining. Slaves think America still is the best country on the planet. Slaves think we shall overcome someday. Slaves think, amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. Slaves think, good morning, everybody. Let me tell you about my Jesus. Let me tell you about what I've seen, what I know. Ain't he good? Won't he do it for you? Can't you see him? Won't he tell me, can I get an amen? Can he? Slaves think, and look, y'all, I'm just being honest with myself. From my studying, from my 71 years on this planet, you know, I've read the Bible, I've read the Old Testament, New Testament, studied Islam, okay? But like I said now, my gospel is Henry Barry, Abraham Lincoln, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin. I can see what these gentlemen said 200 years ago in some cases. I can still see their plan working in my lifetime, in our lifetime. That's why I now see death. To me, death now is, again, Mama, I apologize. Death to me now is another nigga who never saw freedom. Meaning, for me to understand that and have to admit that, I'm saying that my mama never saw freedom, that my daddy never saw freedom, that my sister never saw freedom, that my great-grandmother, my aunts, my uncles, all my people, none of my people ever saw freedom. Never saw freedom. Because they died as I'm about to, and we all are about to, if we don't do something to change it immediately, they died slaves. In search, and they weren't even in search of freedom because they thought they were. The civil rights movement led us to think good times are coming, that we're better than what we were. We are making improvements. We are making strides. Things are coming and light is getting better. We just got to hang in there. We got to keep hope alive and be nonviolent. And as Malcolm said, there's never been a nonviolent revolution. There's never been a nonviolent fight for your freedom. Especially when you're aggressor, when you're master is an evil, wicked, conniving, murderous, cheating, lying, stealing master. There's no such thing as nonviolent to fight for your freedom. Now, what is freedom that we've never seen? In my opinion, again, being honest with myself, Brother Marvin, I'm about ready to wrap this up. Freedom is heaven. It's a place where there's love, peace, and happiness. There's no slavery, suffering, death. Okay? Freedom. We've lost our freedom to slavery. Slavery is the opposite of freedom. Slavery, you are enslaved. Your freedom is gone. You will, as long as you are a slave, you will never know freedom. Never see freedom. That's the point of slavery. We must be honest with ourselves. We are slaves in the white man's world. And if we don't change it, if we don't do something before we leave here, we will die having never seen freedom. In my humble opinion, brother, that's me being honest with myself as we must be honest with ourselves. And if we're honest with ourselves and see that and understand that, then the next thing, and I know Brother Marvin's going to ask, what do we do about it? What do we do next? And to me, we all must be the one. We must stand together. And what's the one? The one is honest with himself. The one loves himself. The one loves his people. The one believes in himself. The one believes in his people, even if they don't believe in themselves. The one always stands for what he knows is right, even if you have to stand alone. The one loves for his brother what he loves for himself. The one is a great communicator, and he knows how to listen. The one is not afraid to die for what is right, and the one would rather serve in heaven than to rule in hell. Be the one, brother. Thank you for the opportunity, Brother Marvin.
Thank you, Brother Booker. Very stirring.
Thank you, brother.
Had me thinking about a whole lot of stuff, things, ideas. I'm sure the listeners as well. So we're going to go to the lines. It's right at the top of the hour, but I do want to, again, mention that Slido was in effect today, and Slido is pretty good today. Slido 4261282, slido.com, going out there, put your comments out there if you don't want to call into the call-in line, which is 845-277-9250. It's always welcome to call and voice your thoughts, opinions on what has been provided to you today. All right, let's go over to the lines real quick. First, we're going to go over to 334, and last four is 0148, 334-0148. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so very much, Brother Marvin. And I really hope that this is one of those top-ranked presentations. Brother Chambers, thank you so very much for your presentation. Man, I was hand clapping, amening, yelling, the whole kit caboodle. And I want to leave and listen to the rest of the show, but I want to leave with this. There is a quote by Johann von Goethe. He says, the best slave is the one who thinks he is free. And so it was just amazing for you to reflect back on the attorney Berry back there in 1800s in Virginia, because I had read that before some time ago, and I said, my goodness gracious, it's come back up again. We must be able to think godly and like God and not think like slaves. Thank you so very much, Brother Chambers, for your presentations. I loved it. I loved it.
Thank you, brother.
All right. Thank you, Brother Lush. Brother Booker, let's go back to being the one, right? And even in the comment that Brother Lush just made, the best slave is the one who thinks he is free, right?
Yes, sir.
Who thinks he is free, right? So the one can be off a tick or two, right? So let's talk about how we can change that dynamic in terms of the thinking, right? Because if you don't change the mind and you don't change the mindset, right, we're going to continue to repeat the cycle. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it like Brother George mentioned a little earlier, and again, you as individuals, we have to start with ourselves. We got to, like last night, we had a big conversation with my little 12-year-old grandson, because he's been acting up and everything. And in fact, I hadn't seen my wife so angry in a while. And I asked him during the discussion, do you love yourself? At first he said, I don't know. I said, what? You don't know? I don't know. Because he was trying to get out of, he later said, I love myself, Papa. I said, well, earlier you said you don't. I said, because if you love yourself, you're going to love your mama. You love yourself, you're going to love your daddy. You love yourself, you're going to love your people. You're going to love, we have to start with ourselves, love yourself, be honest with ourselves. And if we do that, I think, brother, we have a mind, you know. We have a great mind. And we know what's right or what's wrong. And folks may say, well, what's right, what's wrong? You as an individual know. You define, the God in you defines what's right, what's wrong. You know having sex with a child is wrong. Anybody got to tell you that? Anybody got to set you down and threaten you to go to jail, threaten to lock you up if you have sex with a child? You know that's wrong. You know taking somebody's life, not in defense of yours, is wrong. No one has to tell you that. The God in you, your nature tells you that. We have to start within ourselves and stand up as ourselves, as first, because we know. I don't know. Yes, you do know. You know what's in you. You know what's right. You know what's wrong. Does not God determines right and wrong? Nobody tells him. It's in you. We've got to search inside ourselves, because I always say, if you be the one and I be the one, we'll find each other. We'll find ourselves. That's what we first got to do.
All right.
We all got to get on
that. Would you agree that the love for self in terms of the African-American community was lost? That we've lost.
Oh yeah.
The knowledge of love for self, right? And in the scriptures it says, "Love yourself as your neighbor." And I always say, "How can you love yourself as your neighbor if you don't know how to love yourself?" So how do we learn how to love ourselves again? How do we learn how to take that first step of being honest? Because I think it's a learned process. If it was unlearned, right, and it was beat out you, or whipped out of you, chained out of you, strained out of you, how do we take those steps to learn how to love ourselves and each other again?
Well, just like an alcoholic, you first admit you're an alcoholic, you got to first admit you don't love yourself. that you don't know what it is. All right? And then once you do that, then you can take the steps to say, well, you know what? Because when you admit you don't love yourself, and you know you don't love yourself, then you hope you start to ask yourself, well, why don't I love myself? Mm-hmm. What have I done to myself? Or what has been done to me? That causation come in. Like I said earlier, I used to hate my daddy because I didn't understand what was going on with my father, why he wasn't in my life and so forth. But then one of my white professors in one of my classes said something about causation. When I was going to make a movie about a guy robbing a liquor store, he said, if you make that movie, I probably won't watch it because I've seen it 1,000 times. He said, but if you make that movie about why he robbed that liquor store, then you might get me. And that changed my outlook. I started then focusing on why my father acted like he acted, why my stepfather acted like he acted, why my uncles and aunts act, why we act like we act, what's the cause of our action? And when I started looking at it like that, I then said, oh, man, I see. We off the plantation. That's plantation in us. That's the slave in us. That's what we've been conditioned or made to do or made to function like. Now we deal with that. Since you know that has happened to me, how do I undo it?
Well,
if I hate myself, then I got to love myself. I got to say, okay, now, they made me hate the color of my skin. They made me hate being black. They made me hate being, it turned all this, like I said, there was some fight in us in the 60s. Still some fight left in us in the 60s. They took that fight that was in us in the 60s and put it against each other, made us put it against each other instead of them. Instead of fighting the system and fighting the man, we started fighting each other. Because they started rewarding us for fighting each other. You want out of your situation? Like Bella Lushner said, the best slave is the one who thinks he's free. Like I said, I was chasing money. I was chasing success. I thought that was the way. I thought I had it. I thought I was on the right path. I thought I was on that track, man. I'm gonna be it. I'm gonna be a star singer. I'm gonna be it. I'm gonna star. And my mentality back then was I just wanted white folks to give me a chance to show them that I was just like them, or I was as good as them. Just give me an opportunity. The mind, as you said, Bella, it's the mind. What caused it? You know. I'm leaving myself to please others, and that's what we have to understand. I'm hating myself to please others, like the video you sent from YouTube the other day, what the House Negro said. Said the House Negro loved Master more than Master loved himself. And so that's self-hatred. You love your master more than the master loved himself. What's
so
called?
You would agree that love is a part of the conditioned state that our people have been placed in, that Henry Barrett and all of the other people that you mentioned, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, and even Abraham Lincoln talked about, right? So we know and we're aware that we're in the conditioned state. How do we break the condition?
Well,
these are some really good things that we must think about, right?
I know it's isn't an overnight thing. Not really, but the message never changed. The truth never changes. You've got to look at yourself and say, I've been wrong. I've been wronged. I've been hoodwinked and bamboozled. I've been fooled. I hate myself. Now, what I need to start doing things. Now, I need to start showing that I love myself. I need to start showing that I love for my brother what I love for myself. I need to start helping my neighbor. I need to start helping my neighborhood. I need to start helping each other. Like I said, love for my brother what I love for myself. We need to start putting those, I guess for lack of a better term, putting those messages out, not only just putting the messages out, but demonstrating the messages, showing the messages, showing what we need to do as individuals. This is what I'm doing, and I invite you to do it too. And here's what we need to do, and I'm doing it. Join me. If not, I'm moving on. you know, because I can't, I hate to say I waste time, but truth be told, being honest with myself, in this situation we're in, brother, we're not going to save everybody. We're not going to reach everybody. Everybody not going to get it or want to get it. Everybody, you know, like, again, what brother said, the best slave is one who thinks he's free. We've got to, we just got to reach out, touch as many as we can, and hope as many as we want, as many as we want to, will respond in a positive way and start loving themselves. That's all we're going to ask you to do, is love yourself. If you do that, you'll be all right. That's all. Just stop with that.
That's
if
true,
you
brother.
Love yourself, you'll be all right.
Absolutely true. You're listening live to African American Empowerment Saturday. We've got Brother Booker here. Think like slaves, or thinking like slaves instead of thinking like gods. It's the conversation today, and then Brother Booker laid it out rather eloquently. And so, again, if you want to join us, 845-277-9250. Slido, go over to slido.com and put in the number 4261282, and you can dialogue with us. Okay, let's go back to Slido for a minute. If you're teaching people to be honest with themselves or to be honest with yourself, where would you start and how would you teach it to our people?
Now, we talk teaching to my people. We talking one-on-one or we talking to the masses? I guess we may be talking to the masses. But one-on-one, how would I, if I was in a conversation with people, to be honest with yourself, I guess I would start by saying, asking that person, do you know what honesty is? Do you know what truth is? Okay? And when I say yourself, do you know what I'm talking about? So let's make sure we're on the same page right there. If you know what honesty is, truth is, you know what yourself is, what I'm talking about, then I put the question out, are you honest with yourself? When you study, I guess you can do like I have done. Review my life. Review your life. Your life. Your whole life since you've been on this plantation. Study what we're saying. You know, study the Bible. Study the Quran. Study teachings of Islam. Study whatever you're going to study. And then after you get that data or information, now be honest with yourself and say what you can, well, agree with and what you don't agree with. Say to you now, after you've done your research, what seems to be true to you, being honest with yourself. Then you, that person or those people will then have to take it from there.
That's true.
Me telling you all,
you know,
the time, you know. Ain't gonna, you got to come to that conclusion. You've got to analyze the information and study and then be honest with yourself if you know what being honest is, truth is, et cetera. You follow me?
Right, yep. That's true. So the laws of Mayat talk about truth, justice, and righteousness, right, in terms of a way of living and experiencing life. And so we can find that in all of the religions. I just believe whether you want to practice it or not would probably be central to how you express that in your behaviors and your thoughts and your actions. I think all, to me, all religions and all belief systems are adequate and can be effective if effectively practiced. Again, slido.com, go out there. We're going to go back to the lines, Brother Booker, and we're going to go over to 252-5347. First three is 252, last four is 5347. Welcome to the show. Welcome to African American Empowerment. Do you have a question or comment?
Hey, good comment. Good show today, brothers. Appreciate it, man. Brother got some very good information. I enjoyed listening to him. Not a whole lot to say, man. I think Brother Bruce needs to do a sequel to the book, Recapturing the African Mind. He needs to do a part two to it. I think it would be very effective to bring up today. Good show again, Brother Marvin. Keep up the good work. And the brother there, keep sharing the knowledge. Brother George, that was very good historical knowledge that he put out earlier in the show. We need to keep pumping that kind of information that's always a good foundation for our people. You know where you come from, and the substance of what you are is always good as well. So everything I've heard has been good and been a good been good information for me today. So I just like everything that I've heard. So you brothers keep up the good work, all right?
Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you, Brother Reg. Thanks for calling in.
All right.
Knowledge is power.
All right.
Knowledge is
all right.
power.
Take care,
thank you, sir. All right. You know, I think thinking about how we think, and this is, I think, critical as we move forward, to think about how you think, right, is very important to the way in which we can begin to heal. And so that, again, would be a process, and we're going to have to get in the process of healing the way we think and the ways in which we feel about each other and ourselves. All right, let's go back to Slido. And the next question here is, or statement is, we have learned how to adapt to our environment, our experiences, and the system of racism and white supremacy in this country. And so I think, again, this statement is saying we have adapted, right, and we continue to adapt to the system and the strategies that's put in place as we continue to experience them in this country. How do we move to a place, Brother Booker, where our adaptive strategies are ones that develop us and protect us as we move along?
Well, you sent out a text the other day, and I looked for it today, and I couldn't find it. What a brother was saying, I don't remember exactly what he said in philosophy, that you cannot look for, I'm paraphrasing now, you cannot look for a solution to your problem or situation from the system that created your problem to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was something along that vein, and I have to ask the question: what is adapting? What does adapting mean? You know, because if I say adapting means to me adjusting to, learning how to understand it. My thing would be then, I don't want to adapt to hell. Why should I adapt to hell? If I'm in hell, why adapt to hell? I want to get out of hell. I don't want to adapt no more. I don't need to adapt anymore to hell. I need to get out of hell. I need to get hell out of me. So that would be my adapting. My adapting would be to get the hell out of me, not adapt to it. You follow me, brother?
Yes. Yeah.
That's,
so
that's
how do we get the hell out of hell, so to speak?
How do you get it goes back to the mind first. You got to get the hell mm-hmm. out of you. Out of your mind. Yeah, I got to get that hellish mentality out of me. Like I said on a Facebook post I did, hell is a lifestyle, just as heaven is a lifestyle. And wherever that lifestyle is hell. It's not above, it's not below ground, not above the earth. It's where that lifestyle is, hellish lifestyle. Get that lifestyle out of your mind, a lifestyle of murdering, lying, stealing, cheating, fornicating, adultery, homosexuality, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, rape, pedophiling. Get that hell out of your mind. And then you'll be getting yourself out of hell. You might still be physically on this planet, but your actions, your mind is not hellish anymore. I'm not doing any of those hellish activities. I'm not working at hellish places. I'm not participating anymore in hell because I've got the hell out of me. That's where you start. that's how I would adapt, you know, get the hell out of me.
All right, let's go back to Slido. It says, what Brother Booker said was depressing. It sounds good for 1865, but it would probably be propaganda to deter black growth today. It's only history at this time.
Well, I read in a white man's book one time in journalism school, said that wise scholars agree to understand the present and the future, you must first understand the past. And that's what we were talking about earlier. It falls right back into being honest with ourselves. That happened for a purpose. That happened for a reason when it happened in the past, 150 years ago, 200 years ago. It happened back then so this lifestyle would be prevalent today. It happened back then so slaves would still be slaves today. Mm. I apologize, Mama, but so niggers would still be niggers today. That's why it happened, and you have to learn from it and then do something about it. Don't be depressed. You can be a little upset, be a little pissed and motivated to say, I'm going to change it. I can see that it happened and is affecting our lives today. Let's change it. Let's do something about it. What can I do? Work on being the one and come together as a people.
I like
that. At work, asked me the other day, did I believe in the resurrection of Jesus Christ? I said, sister, the resurrection I believe in, the resurrection is when black folk rise up from the mental death that we are in. If we rise up from this mental death that we are in, you will see Jesus. You will see the second coming when we rise up from this shallow grave that we are buried in. That's the we are the resurrection. We just need to come together as a people. We need to rise up from this mental death that we are in. Admit that it happened.
I like that.
I know it can be depressing. Admit that it happened, okay? It happened to us, okay? But now let's move forward. Let's do something about it.
I like that. Let's do something about it. So this is our effort, right, to bring awareness, right, to the condition, the mental condition. Look at the conditions of our cities and where our people live, if we're willing to be honest about it, right? The condition of our children and the schools that they go to and the families that they live in and the parents that raise them and the substance abuse and the violence and the pain and the trauma. And we have to understand that there's a why to it all, right? Let's go back to Slido. Get off my soapbox. African-American / black dysfunctional families are simply a response to the pain and suffering associated with racialized trauma. And those who are well-versed in understanding the trauma that we've experienced in this country understand that the root source and at the heart of the dysfunction that goes on in our families and within ourselves, right? The mass incarceration, for example, right? War on drugs, crack, and all of that are derivatives of the system that put those things in place. And we got to see that, right? So it's still a continuous, like you said, Brother Booker, of the system that has been put in place to keep us down and put us down. But by choice, right? And this is what I'm saying. We got to think about it. A lot of these things now through our conditioning have become choices for us, because if we changed our minds, the prisons would be empty. If we changed our minds and our hearts, right, our families would be healing. If we changed our minds, we would then stop using those substances that are destroying our people and stop selling it to them, right? So there's a lot of changes that need to go on. We just need to bring it to our awareness and then take action to do something about it. Let's go back to the lines, Brother Booker, because we've got just a few more minutes left. Let's go down to 804-9116. 804-9116. You're live. You're on. Do you have a question or comment for Brother Booker?
Yes, sir. Wanted to say good job.
Hey, brother.
Welcome
to the show.
How y'all doing, man? Yes, sir. Thanks for having me. Thanks for inviting me. I wanted to quote David Banner, because he was right along the lines of Brother Booker today. Sort of, kind of. But David Banner put it in these terms, that if a computer was malfunctioning with the virus uploaded, us being the computer, the virus or the computer programmer being the higher-ups or whoever systematically created our reality, what we live in now. He said, if the computer started to crash and wig out and act inappropriate, would you blame the computer or would you blame the programmer? And that's where we're at right now. The programming of our people is so strong, and they continue to add on every year or every moment. It's always something that they're adding on to, like, deter us from our true godly self. So I appreciate you fellas for doing what you're doing, because it allows to the contrary. It allows the opposition to be broken down, because daily we're dealing with the entertainment that toxifies our people. The list goes on and on and on, or the toxic things that we have to endure that continues to program us. So I want to salute you fellas for opposing the toxic effects, you know. And
thank you, brother.
That's all I got to say to this.
Thank you, brother.
All right. Thank you for calling. As we know, knowledge is power, right? The more that we know, the more that we can grow. And we're going to have to do the job and the work of changing our minds and our hearts. Brother Booker, closing comments as we wrap up today. Thank you for a great lecture and getting us to think about how we think and what we think about. And I would simply suggest to our listeners, don't take offense, right? But do your research, right? Consider how you feel about what you heard, and then ask yourself why. And as we continue to learn and grow, there's some things that will come to our attention, right, in our thoughts and our minds that we may not like. But at the same time, we have to consider them, right? And it's about educating ourselves. That's what we have. Brother Booker, final comments. We got 2 minutes and 43 seconds left.
Yes, sir. I just want to say, I'm not going to apologize, per se. I apologize if I offended anyone, because the truth, you shouldn't have to apologize for the truth, okay? There's no apology for the truth. We have to be honest with ourselves and accept the reality in which we live in. And when I say the one loves himself, loves his people, understand that I mean that. I love myself. I love my people. I believe in myself. I believe in my people. Even if my people don't believe in themselves, I will always stand for what I know is right, even if I have to stand alone. I will say I will never do anything to hurt any of my people. I love for my brother what I love for myself. You know, and I'm not afraid to die for what I know is right, if I got to stand up for it. And I definitely would rather serve in heaven than to rule in hell. And being the one, just know, brothers and sisters, that I'm with you. And my goal before I leave this planet is to make sure we all see freedom while we're here and not when we die. Brother Martin, thank you again for the opportunity, brother. I really appreciate it.
All right, Brother Booker, well stated. Well stated. Thank you again. Brother George, final comments.
Yeah, brother, I'm kind of, I think that the lecture was great. It's kind of loud out here because I'm on the highway. Brother Booker, you did a great job today, man. You really laid out, you know, the condition of our people well. And I want to thank you for that.
So, thank you, brother.
All right. Thank you, Brother George. Thank you, Brother Booker. Thank you for listening. The work has to be done by us, and we have to be able to work on our minds, our hearts, our families, our communities, but most importantly, working on ourselves each day, every day, one day at a time. Do the work. Just do the work, right? Do the work. That's what we have for this week. Thank you for joining us. Peace and blessings, and we'll talk to you next week. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.